We need to look at this as the Taliban responding to U.S. pressure.
Afghan attacks test regional security strategies. It's Tuesday, January 30th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, President Trump's State of the Union as it relates to China. China and Japan seek common ground on trade. The Koreas unify on the ice hockey rink. It's all on today's VOA Asia. 11 members of the Afghan National Army were killed and 16 others wounded in an early morning attack on a military academy in Kabul Monday. A spokesman for the Afghan Defense Ministry says the attack was against an army unit providing security for the academy and not for the academy itself. Five suicide bombers are said to have carried out the attack. Islamic State has claimed responsibility. Javid Faisal, the deputy spokesman for the Office of Afghanistan's chief executive, tweeted the five suicide bombers were the members of the Haqqani Network. The network is part of the Afghan Taliban and is blamed for many of the deadliest attacks inside Afghanistan. Michael Kugelman, deputy director and senior associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center, tells VOA why the Taliban would be involved.
We need to look at this as the Taliban responding to U.S. pressure. The U.S. is going after the Taliban. It's intensifying the fight on the battlefield. And the Taliban clearly wants to demonstrate to the United States and to Afghanistan that this will not weaken the Taliban, that it remains strong. And so I think this is why the Taliban is increasing these attacks in cities, where it will get a lot of media attention and a lot of attention, essentially to say, well, look, you may try to intensify the fight against us, but it's not going to work, and we're still strong, and we can prove it with these attacks in Kabul and in other Afghan cities.
This is a third attack in Kabul in 10 days. An attack on Kabul's Intercontinental Hotel earlier resulted in several dozen killed, including 14 foreigners. The U.S. State Department confirmed Americans were among the foreigners, but did not disclose how many. The Afghan Taliban claimed both the Intercontinental attack as well as the attack this past weekend. The latest attack comes on a day when the city is still reeling with the aftermath of another deadly attack that killed more than 100, including many policemen. The entire country observed Sunday as a day of mourning. Nationwide prayer services were planned for those victims today. Michael Kugelman says tighter security is an urgent priority for the Afghan government.
Quite frankly, at this moment in time, Afghanistan is experiencing an extremely serious security crisis. And I think that the most important thing now, the priority, is for it to be focusing on its security crisis, all of these attacks happening. And I think in that regard, it needs to emphasize diplomacy with its closest security partners, including the United States.
Monday's attack also coincided with the visit of Indonesian President Joko Widodo, who was in town for a day. Earlier, he had visited neighboring Pakistan, where he had proposed the establishment of a committee of Islamic scholars from Indonesia, Afghanistan, and Pakistan to promote a peaceful settlement of the Afghan conflict. The United States and Afghanistan accused Pakistan of providing safe havens to the leadership of the network, along with the leadership of the Afghan Taliban. Michael Kugelman tells VOA the United States may have other options to deal with the issue.
My view is that the U.S. will try other pressure points beyond freezing aid, which has already happened. I understand the U.S. government is already trying to plan ways to mitigate possible Pakistani retaliations. So that suggests the U.S. will use pressure points. I do not think the U.S. will declare Pakistan as a state sponsor of terror. That would be a very dramatic pressure point that would not only probably not work, but it would probably mean that Pakistan would retaliate by closing down supply lines on its soil used by NATO forces to access Afghanistan.
Pakistan claims it has carried out military operations to purge its territory of any sanctuaries, and there are no more safe havens on its soil. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. 11 killed in second attack in 3 days in Kabul. India to regain title of fastest growing economy. North and South Korea hit by flu outbreaks ahead of the Olympics. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, and also visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. President Donald Trump intends to use his first State of the Union address later Tuesday to cite economic progress under his watch. The White House says the president will point to a robust economy and low unemployment during his first year and the benefits of a tax reduction. But what about the economy as it applies to international dealings, especially when it comes to the United States and China? VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Dr. Barry Naughton, professor of economics at the School of Global Policy Strategy at the University of California in San Diego.
Barry, a New York Times article Sunday headlined that at the just-concluded economic forum in Davos, Switzerland, the real star may have been China and not Donald Trump. Do you agree with that?
I think to a certain extent there's some truth to that. We know that the Chinese policy advisor, Liu He, was at Davos, and his talk was also very well attended. Perhaps not as many people there as at President Trump's, but people were very, very interested to see what Mr. Liu had to say. So I think there is some truth to the idea that China has taken the initiative in terms of global economic policy.
Is it fair to say, and I quote from a New York Magazine article earlier this month that said, China has never seen such a moment when its pursuit of a larger role in the world coincides with America's pursuit of a smaller one?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. But it's not so much, it's not solely, I would say, that that President Trump is looking for a smaller role for the United States. It's also that the signals coming out of Washington are so difficult for people to read that in a way they've given up on reading it. So, in other words, people go to Davos and they're very, very interested to know what President Trump is going to say, but then when he makes some statements, he said some potentially very interesting things, right? He said the United States would consider negotiating with the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership countries, as a group, which would be a dramatic shift in U.S. policy. But the problem is everybody shrugs and says, well, does he mean it or not? We don't know. We have to wait and see. So I think there's a very strange situation going on where China is sending signals which are complex but meaningful. I mean, they don't necessarily mean exactly what they seem to say on the surface, but there certainly is a intentional signaling going on from China. Whereas for the United States, we get these signals coming from Washington, and we can't read them. We can't understand how serious they are. So I think people in the rest of the world are sort of waiting for the United States, but engaging actively with China, since that's the new power that they have to think about.
Do you view this as being dangerous to the United States in any way?
I view it as being extremely dangerous for the United States. I mean, when we think of the United States and China as two large economies and two potential global powers, you know, there's no question that the United States is ahead in many ways, but it's not that much farther ahead. And China has the dramatic advantage that a very large proportion of the economy's resources can be controlled by the government and can be used by the government in pursuit of strategic objectives when the government chooses to do that. Of course, it obviously can't choose to do that all the time because economic resources need to fulfill their economic purposes, but the potential is there. Now, offsetting that potential is the fact that the U.S. has numerous economically, politically, and militarily strong allies. So as long as the U.S. is coordinating with its allies, I think there's no fundamental issue. The strength of the U.S. alliance system is not only stronger than China, but stronger than China will ever be.
But is it not true that that list of allies of the United States is growing shorter?
Well, I think it's not so much that it's fundamentally growing shorter as that our allies are throwing up their hands and they're saying, what does the U.S. want? Where is it going? How should we protect our interests? I mean, to take just two clear examples, Korea, meaning South Korea, and Mexico. These are two countries that want very much to cooperate with the United States.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Dr. Barry Naughton, professor of economics at the School of Global Policy Strategy at the University of California in San Diego, California. Happening now in Asia, India says there are 21 million unwanted girls across the country. The Indian government's annual economic survey blames illegal gender-based abortions for a sex ratio of 940 females for every 1,000 males, according to the latest census data. The preference for sons is rampant, especially in rural communities. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The foreign ministers of longtime rivals China and Japan, Wang Yi and Taro Kono, met in Beijing Sunday for talks that could pave the way for an eventual trilateral free trade pact involving South Korea. The meeting took place on the 40th anniversary of the signing of the China-Japan Treaty of Peace and Friendship. Animosities stem from Japan's invasion and partial occupation of China before and during World War II, recent territorial tensions in the East China Sea, the North Korean nuclear menace, and proposed amendments to Japan's post-war pacifist constitution have not improved things. But President Xi Jinping and Prime Minister Shinzo Abe met on the sidelines of a regional summit in Vietnam in November. Both sides would appear to gain from improving ties. Yoichiro Sato is a security studies professor at Ritsumeikan Asia Pacific University in Japan, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty that the two countries appear to be on course to repair past damage to bilateral ties.
But as far as China is concerned, this is not for China's like really long-term strategy, but more like a tactical move in light of two ongoing events. One is that China's economy is slowing down, and China is definitely looking for a way to attract more Japanese investments, hopefully try to lure Japan into a trilateral free trade arrangement with South Korea. For Japan, this is not a bad opportunity because the U.S., you know, withdrew from TPP and Donald Trump's condition for returning into the TPP is still very much based on the U.S. interests, and Japan does not feel a strong desire to renegotiate the TPP on behalf of the United States. The second issue is the Korean Peninsula. China does feel slight but some significant possibility that the U.S. will actually resort to a military action against North Korea, and China wants to prevent that by any means. Rather, China wants to create a momentum for corporate restructuring of anti-North Korea coalition.
Of course, the two countries have a territorial dispute in the East China Sea. There's also a concern about the possibility of amending Japan's pacifist constitution. That has been a source of concern in Beijing.
Yes, but I think China has resigned to the fact that the constitutional amendment has a good chance of succeeding under Abe. I think China has done everything to prepare itself for that kind of occurrence. On the issue of territorial dispute, I don't think China has changed its policy at all, if not made it more aggressive. I think the ongoing plan for the foreign ministerial talk, as well as a possible summit talks between Abe and Xi Jinping, will do anything to ameliorate the dispute.
Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, who took part in Sunday's meeting, said while bilateral relations are still confronted with uncertainties, they are also of great significance to the region and the world. You've been listening to VOA Asia, and wherever you happen to be listening, we're glad you've been with us today. If you happen to be in Malaysia, catch us on the radio at Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur. We thank everyone there who is listening today. As we always thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Jimmy Cook, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.